بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. One person came to one Buzurg for his personal Islah. So the Shaykh asked him, "Have you got any wealth?" He said, "Yes." So the Shaykh asked him, "When? Give away that wealth. And how much of wealth you've got? Say, about a couple of thousands. Give all that away." As he left to give away that wealth, he asked him, no, don't give it away. Go and throw it in the ocean where you can't pick it up and nobody can pick it up. And then he told him, "And don't just throw it away like that. Throw one at a time. You've got gold coins, so throw one, then the second one, and then the third one, and then the fourth one." If you want to throw all at once, then there's not going to be so much of pain. And you're going to throw one, and then the second one, and then the third one, there's going to be a lot of pain. The question that will come in anybody's mind is, to waste wealth is haram. How did the Shaykh instruct this person to throw away that wealth? That will be the question. So there is quite a few answers for that. Hazrat Sulaiman alayhi salam was inspecting his steeds of war. Is urida alayhi bil ashi safinatul jiyad. Very swift moving, and apart from them being very swift in their movement, they were of very high stock. Urida alayhi bil ashi safinatul jiyad. So in the process of him inspecting all these animals, he missed out some ma'amul of his, whether it was faraz, whether it was sunnat, whether it was mustahab, that has not been mentioned, but some ma'amul of his has been missed out. So he became very much remorseful, and he says that in the process of me inspecting this, I have missed out on ma'amul. Inni ahbabtu hubbal khayri an dhikri rabbi. That I have preferred some material over the remembrance of my Rabb. He instructed that Rudduha Ali, bring it back to me. And then فَتَفِقَ مَسْحَمْ بِالسُّوقِ وَالْعَنَاكِ. Then he began to pass his sword over its leg and over its neck. He began to kill all of them. He killed and slaughtered all those animals. So now the question will come that, why did he waste wealth? Steeds of war, like I had explained yesterday, the training an animal, it's a very difficult process. And when it's trained, then it's a very priceless commodity. It's very well trained. To the extent that it's been trained, it's a very expensive commodity. Now, if it's for war, then it can't be just 2-3. It'd be hundreds, perhaps thousands, because you need so many people to go into war. And then he's got all those animals and he's just slaughtering them, killing them away. So the question is, why did he waste away that wealth? So in the terminology of the Sufiya Ikram, this is called ghairat. This is their own terminology, right? That is why, of one's own, it is not right to study Sufi kitabs. Right? Because they've got their own terminology. Right? Now, for example, they got a term, Ayn. Right? Ayn. Now, Ayn, generally in Arabic, will translate as the individual himself. Right? The individual himself. But in their kitabs, when they use the word Ayn, then it's got a different meaning altogether. Totally different meaning. It doesn't have the same meaning as you would find it in the dictionary. The dictionary meaning is different, and the meaning that they use is quite different altogether. Or for example, they say, أَيُّوَ السَّاقِي إِسْقِنِي وَلَا تُسْقِنِي سِرًّا مَهْمَا يُمْكِنُ الْجَهْرِ. Okay, you must pour the wine, and don't pour it secretly, pour it openly, and tell me that this is wine. Now, these are dangerous words. Now, if someone reads these books here, you say the Sufis, there was some Sufi order, and they were drinking wine. Then your mind will go to the same, like I said, three, four days ago, Khaja ke darbar mein, and ganja ki bepar hai. So now this is the terminology, this is the poetic language, right? What it means, you're asking the Shaykh for some love of Allah Ta'ala, that he must just pour some love of Allah Ta'ala into your heart. And why he used this word, why they use the word wine, they use the word wine is because that person that is an addict, then he has an impassionate love towards wine, got a passion. He can't do without it. So my love for Allah Ta'ala must come to that level that I'm impassionate. I can't do without Allah Ta'ala. I don't feel at ease without Allah Ta'ala. At any given time in the morning, evening, then I want Allah Ta'ala. So it's just a simile, right? But it's used in poetic language. Now, we go and look into these people's books directly, and then we say they're all kafirs, right? Now, that's not fair. It's a terminology of its own, so we have to respect the terminology. Therefore, Muhyiddin Ibn Arabi, rahmatullahi, he used to say, it is haram for people to look at our books. What he was referring to, the same thing, that you don't know the term, and you're reading these books here, either you will term them as kafirs, or you'll become a kafir, one of the two will happen, right? You will term them as kafirs, and if you take the literal meaning, and you go and apply it yourself, then you'll become a kafir. So it's dangerous all round. So don't go and read the books directly. Unless you've got a tutor that is guiding you throughout. Unfortunately, this has become the end of this Sufism, tasawuf, akhlaq, that everybody wants to experiment, everybody wants to give his two cents, everybody wants to give his own explanation, and we don't want to learn it as we would learn any other science. Any other science, then we go to professional people and we'll go and acquire it from them directly. We'll take the training from them as well. We don't want to do it and experiment our own selves. We rather go and take it from someone that is senior. In fact, the person that is taking it from someone senior, people have the confidence in him. And if someone says, no, I studied myself, I can do a heart operation. Where you studied? On my own I studied. How you experiment? On my own. What experiment? With sheep and goats. I experimented, I got all the things right, all the pipes and all, I connected right. Are you prepared to go to him? I know in the old days when you were studying in India, so as you stop by the bus station, you know, you're going from Deoband, Jalalabad, Tanabun, somewhere, so they stop several places. As they stop, the person will tell you, we will do all your teeth, root canal, fillings, everything. How they do it on a cycle. That cycle is, that thing is moving, the drill. You know, the dentist has a drill. So as he's pedaling, the thing will. So we'll do it for you. So you don't take a chance at doing all these things here. They used to do, we used to see these things, they're doing it. Anyway, what I'm getting at is that we don't take a chance in these things, because we know that how, what a sensitive thing it is. What a sensitive thing it is. We don't take a chance in these things. But strangely, when it comes to deen, then we don't take a chance. No, I can do it myself, he can do it, that person can do it, everybody can do it. So it's got its sensitivities. So we are talking about the Sulaiman alayhi salam, and he's inspecting his steeds of war. And he went and killed all those animals, right? Now come down, Abu Talha radiallahu anhu, and he's engaged in namaz, and some bird or something has caught his attention. No, now, it's not right for me to have this orchard, although it's a priceless commodity. Maybe some liked his bag, right? The water was nice and crystal. And in the desert, to have a spring and to have water, it's a priceless commodity. So no, my namaz, although it is a nafal namaz, and a little bit of distraction, and say, no, now I must give it away. Right? Then you come again, a third incident of that sahabi. Rasulullah walked past and he saw a building, tall building, right? That was unusually tall. And Nabi showed some sign of disapproval. When he learned and Nabi showed some sign of disapproval, then he demolished the whole building, right? Then he didn't take the pains to debate with Nabi Sallallahu, ya Rasulullah, you know, I've made a solid structure, and in the long term it's better this way. You see, it's a solid structure, then you save, rather than having a semi-solid structure or not solid structure, then every year, every 2-3 years, you have to fix it up again. Now I got a solid structure, it's going to be lasting. So he didn't take the pains to go and explain that to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And when he demolished it, and Nabi Sallam learned about it, Nabi Sallam didn't also object, you know, you're wasting money. So much you pay, you spend so much to build this up, and even broke this thing down. So Nabi Sallam didn't say that as well. So this is called ghairat. In other words, in pursuing the love of Allah Ta'ala, something has come in between. Ghairat in Arabic is ishtiraq fil mahbub, right? Shirkat fil mahbub. It's the beloved, right? You are after the beloved, and there is something that is coming in between, right? So the thing that is coming in between, you push it away, right? You are interested in someone, and there's another person that is also interested in that person, so you turn him away, move away. I am already interested, you go do something else, right? So you can't take it. You can't take it when someone else is interested in your beloved, right? You can't take that. So you ask him to move away. So this sahabi, Ansari sahabi, he broke this whole thing down. Abu Talha, he gave that down. And Hazrat Sulaiman alayhi salam, he went and slaughtered all those things. So the reason was one and the same. What this has come as a spanner, it's come as an obstruction in the road of the beloved. We can argue the merits, right? We can argue the merits that the steeds of war is also a deeny thing, isn't it? It's also a deeny thing. So you need the steeds for jihad purposes. And jihad is deen. So when jihad is deen, the preparation for jihad is also deen. أَعِدُّ لَهُمْ مَسْتَطَعْتُمْ مِنْ قُوَّةِ وَمِنْ رِبَاطِ الْخَيْرِ سَرِي is nas. Right? It's from the text of the Quran. It's nas, min ribatil khayl. So the answer to it is very simple. Answer is, one is the direct remembrance of Allah Ta'ala. Namaz is the direct remembrance, right? Zikr, Quran Sharif Tilawat is the direct remembrance. And jihad is a remembrance of Allah Ta'ala, but indirect. It's a service to Allah Ta'ala, right? It's an ibadat, but indirectly it would lead you to Allah Ta'ala. You will get things right, then you will get the whole Islam into existence, right? You will get the plane cleared, after the plain has been cleared, then you're getting Islam. So it's also service and ibadat, but indirectly. And this was direct. Namaz was direct, right? Zikr was direct. Quran Sharif was direct. And this is not a direct remembrance. It's an indirect way to remember Allah Ta'ala. So a direct versus an indirect, right? The thing that is direct is even more important, right? Like wuzu, right? It's not a direct remembrance of Allah Ta'ala. It's a remembrance of Allah Ta'ala. It's also an act of ibadat. But is it a direct or is it indirect? It's an indirect way to remember Allah Ta'ala. Now how you make out, how you work out a direct and an indirect remembrance of Allah Ta'ala is the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala that is direct. The taksir or tatweel matloob hua karta hai. The to do it in abundance and to continuously do it, that is a requirement, it's desired. To do it excessively and to do it for longer periods is required, it's desired. Like namaz, long namaz, hatta tawarramat qadama, right? Until there used to be a swell in the mubarak feet. Right? So that was a direct ibadat. Dhikr is a direct ibadat. So the Quran says, Uskurullaha dhikran kathira. Do dhikr and do it in abundance. Do engage in the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala and engage in the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala in abundance. So that ibadat that is direct, you connect in directly to Allah Ta'ala. The excessive ibadat and lengthy ibadat is desired. But that ibadat that is not direct, then excessive and lengthy ibadat is not desired there. Like wuzu, I said, is an ibadat, right? So now you will see, you know, it's an ibadat, so let me make a lengthy wuzu. Do you do it? Do you do a lengthy wuzu? Instead of doing it in 2 minutes, wuzu will normally take about 2 minutes. Will you take 20 minutes now? Wash it, oh, please, keep rubbing. Take water 20 times, wash over your face. You will do that? You won't do it. Someone takes water 20 times, and no, it's wrong. Or for example, you know, in a indirect ibadat, to unnecessarily go through pain is not rewarding. You're going through some pain, but unnecessarily. It's not rewarding, right? And in a direct ibadat, that pain you're going through is rewarded. Yeah, unnecessarily you're going through pain is not rewarded. Yeah, you're in a very lengthy namazes, so you're getting rewarded for that. But in wuzu, unnecessarily you went through pain, you're not being rewarded for it. Or you're doing it excessively, you're not going to be rewarded for it. Now the wuzu facility is here, right, at the bath, right? So you left the bathroom and you went to Spingo Beach, made wuzu there and came Fajr time. Right. Will you get any additional reward? I ask you. Any additional reward? No additional reward. Will you get any additional reward? No additional reward. Right. You've got the convenience of hot water on an icy cold day. You left the cold water or the hot water and used cold water. Any additional reward you'll get. So the convenience is here and you put yourself into difficulty, you got no additional thawab for that. Third example is indirect reward. You don't have to do it excessively. You don't have to do it excessively, right? But direct ibadat, you do excessively. Two rakats and then two rakats and two rakats and two rakats continuously, right? Now, wuzu alal wuzu, bila wasitatil ibadah, this is makruh. If you made wuzu, you said, I'm going to make some more sawab, I'm going to get more sawab, make another wuzu. And on the second wuzu, let me make the third wuzu, they'll say, makruh is not right. Right. Walking to the masjid is an ibadah. For every step that you take, you're getting reward, right? For every step that you are taking to the masjid, it's a reward. But is it a direct ibadat or indirect ibadat? Is it leading you to an ibadat or is it an ibadat in its own? It's leading you, right? It will lead you to the masjid, so it's an indirect way of getting a sawab, right? So it's an indirect way, So when it's indirect, then excessive indirect is not an act of ibadah. Now from your home, for example, you're coming to the masjid. Right? So you just came to the masjid, door, went home again. Let me make another sa'i. One sa'i is finished, and second sa'i, let me go again. And then I went for the second time, let me try the third time, third sa'i. Let me seven, one time, one safa sa'i will happen. Will you get any additional sawab? I ask you. No additional sawab. So the additional sawab you will get when the ibadat is direct. Direct. And that ibadat which is not direct, then you don't get an additional sawab for doing it in excess. Excessively if you do it, you don't want to get any additional reward for it. Right. Now, these are things that pertain to our the understanding of deen, fiqh of deen. Right. That is why the hadith says that before qiyamah, there are different hadiths. Some hadiths say that ilm will go away. And some say that there will be a lot of ilm. So they reconcile it in this way. Okay, there will be a lot of information, but the understanding of deen will be very little. As with the passage of time, then the understanding will grow less and less and less and less. Though there is a lot of information. Now you're getting so much of kitabs and outdated kitabs. You never hear of those kitabs. You're getting it coming up. But then you look at the understanding of students, then it's gone very, very weak. Though some may be very well versed in Arabic, etc., very well versed. But then if you look at the level of understanding, how much they can grasp, and the level that they can understand and apply, that's gone very, very weak. Extremely weak, right? So, here I was speaking about Hazrat Sulaiman alayhi salam, and I explained that what is ghairat, right? And I explained this incident of this buzurg, that he instructed his murid, go and throw all that wealth out. Now, I come to the point, why did he ask that murid to go and throw that wealth? Rather, he should have given it in charity. Had he given it in charity, then he wouldn't have had that pain at heart, right? He would have had the respect for that wealth. Right? And that Shaykh wanted that must be out of his heart. That attachment, let us say attachment rather than respect, that attachment and that love, he wanted to be out of his heart. So it will go out of his heart when there is going to be a little bit of pain. So painfully he's asked him to get it out, throw it out completely. Now, to understand these people's approach to Islam is a thing on its own. Because we don't know what is Islam. Are we coming etigaf, few days, big some zikr, tasbihat, and all that, and he's moving. So we think the Islah is done. So that Islah that they used to do in the former days was a different. The approach was totally different. The approach was Islah-e Malakat, in their terminologies. Islah-e Malakat, naka Islah-e A'mal. The Islah was done to the Malakat. In other words, to the human mind, you understand, the human mind, you were correcting and you were reshaping the human mind. The mind is all in a jumble, right? So you reshape, giving another shape. Now, why do they prefer this reshaping against just amal? So they say, see, malakat means your mind has got a certain shape, right? Your mind has got a certain shape. Say, for example, your mind is you got an obsession for wealth, right? You got an obsession for wealth. Now, the man is doing interest, assume that is haram, leave it out. But he still got the obsession for wealth. When he's got that obsession for wealth, he left out interest, then he went on to gambling. To tell him that is also haram. So he left out gambling, then he began to steal, right? So he told him stealing is also haram, so he left out that. Then he went to cheat someone, right? Because he has to give expression to that. See that obsession that he's got. That obsession that he's got, he has to give expression to it. So when you stopped him from one, then he went the other way. And you stopped him from the second, then he went the third way. And you stopped him from the third, then he went the fourth way. But he had to give expression to this intrinsic feeling nature of his. He had to give expression somehow. So they say, no, we're going to reshape the mind. And when we're going to reshape the mind, this thing is going to be purged out of the system. Right? The whole that malaka that he had, that shape that he had, we will just give it a reshape. We can't wipe it out completely, but we'll reshape it. That will remain. You can't change the human characteristic. Human nature can't be changed, right? You can't change it. But you'll just give it a reshape. You'll give it the direction will just change, will be altered. Right? So they will work on it and they will redirect the whole thing. Because you can't wipe it out completely. The king and his wazir were discussing the point, you see. The king says, no, malakat ko khatam kiya ja sakta hai. You can change it, you can completely wipe it out. The wazir says, you can't wipe it out. You can give it a reshape, you can redirect it. But to obliterate it, to rub it out of the system, you can't do it. King says, no, you can. And wazir says, you can't. And they say, you know, three people, when they become stubborn, then you can't change them. One is the king, because he's got the power now. He says something, so my word is my honor. Come what may. He's got wealth, he's got power. When he's got power, then he uses his power to impress. Right? So you can't change the king. And the second person that you can't change, when they become stubborn, they firm on their guns, and you can't change them, is a woman. Right? They're firm now. Have it this way, they're going to have it that way. In that wedding, you're going to have a decor, and the decor must be 500,000, and it must be Imarat style. All the waitress all must be Imarat style, then we'll do it like that. So, you can come like a mota, bodybuilder, so big, powerful, mighty, and all that. Nothing doing. Right? They don't worry about your body. They don't worry about your body. They say, no, we want it like this. And you want to make chucha, they say, alright, we'll fix you up. Just one night, they can just turn their face around the other direction. No response, no talking. You do whatever you want. You're always doing whatever you want. You carry on. One night, the wife will just turn the other way around. Now you're trying to scratch her. No, you carry on. Just one night is sufficient to make your Islam. One night, she'll just turn the other way around. So it can be a bodybuilder, it can be whoever, a wrestler, but this woman here, she will make a star of anybody. Right? So that's the second stubborn thing, woman. She'll have her way. You can't change that, right? You can't change that. Ask someone that is married for some time, at least 3, 4 years, 5 years, because the first 1, 2 months is just honeymoon. Right? Honey. Right? I was just telling the students, you know, I looked so many hadiths, but never I saw there was anything like honeymoon, going to the burgs after marriage. I didn't see that hadith still. I still have to discover that. Now, even mulanas are getting married, they go for honeymoon, yeah, burgs and all. Now, I'm not talking of haram and all that, but I'm just looking for the hadith, where it stays now, that after marriage now, Abu Huraira went to the burgs for a holiday. I never saw that. Or Abu Dharr Ghifari, he said, no, I need to know my partner more better. So I had to take her to the burgs. I didn't see these things here. Where they came up from, I don't know where they brought it up from. They're starting up in a wrong note. Wrong, absolutely wrong note. Getting married, you must go for a holiday. You must know the partner. Where they came from? Where it came from? So the second most stubborn person is a woman, right? You can't. And the third, they say hut, barak hut, and the second one is aurat hut, and third one, raj hut, king, woman, and a child. Child, if he gets stubborn, then you can't change him. You can't change him. He'll have his way. So what are we getting at? What story was talking about? The wazir and the king, yeah. So the wazir is saying, no, you can't change. You can't change. And the king is saying, no, you can't change. So the king got power, he's got wealth. Sometimes It's misconstrued. It's misconstrued in this way. People think wealth is intelligence. What? Wealth is intelligence. Hey, the Prime Minister is giving his delivery. He is delivering a message. So because of the power and wealth, so he feels very important, very intelligent. But that wealth and power doesn't mean intelligence. Intelligence is something else. Wealth and power is something else. Two different things, two different commodities. Most of the times, if you look at the rulers of the world, they're all stupids. Simple words, really, they're not talking intelligent. They're not wise. They may use some big words. You know, that big word doesn't mean that man is very intelligent. You know, we bluff ourselves, we get deceived. Big words are used, and we feel that the big words someone is being using, so he's a very, very capable person. Now we translate those big words, come to simple things. But because they have to show that they are something now, they are something very great, they have to give it in very big words. So this is where we get confused. So anyway, the king has got power, he's got might, and he had to prove a point. That you can't redirect the whole thing. No, you can't redirect. You can just change the direction, but you can't reach, you can't obliterate it completely. You can't wipe it out. So anyway, the king told the wazir, we're going to one dawat. Right. He knew what was the dawat all about. So in that dawat, that's taking place at night, the whole jamaat that is in charge of the lights is the cats. The cats are in charge of the lights. At the reception, who's got the lights? They got the lamps there in the hand, right? On the stage, then again, it's the cats. On the aisles again, it's the cats again. But the toilets everywhere, wherever you see now, it's just the cats. They are in charge of the whole lights. They've been trained so well now. They're holding the lights, right? So anyway, what the king is proving that you can change, you can change the whole mindset. Whereas that animal doesn't have that in its mind to organize lights and to be in charge, all that. It doesn't have it in its mind, doesn't have it in its system. But the king had got them to do it. So they're responsible now to see the whole light of the whole dawat is their affair, and they need to take care of the whole thing. So the wazir said, no, you can't do it. So the king, the wazir knew that this dawat is taking place, and he was invited, so he came in. He came in, and he had hid 3-4 mice in one sleeve, 3-4 mice in the other sleeve. As he pulled into dawat, he just let the mice loose. That whole canopy, everything was on fire, finished. The both king and the wazir, they're escaping because of the big fire, the inferno, they're running away. The king is asking the wazir, now, what happened? He said, oh, same thing, you know what you were talking about, that you can obliterate and not obliterate. That's the masla that I tried to prove. You tried to prove and I tried to disprove you. Okay, just a little bit of mice, and that whole intizam was in the shambles. The whole intizam went off. Okay. So these Buzurganadin, in the process of Islam, what they do is they reshape, they redirect this whole malakat. Right? Now you see a sahabi like Hazrat Abu Dharr Ghifari Radiyallahu, right? He's a very powerful person. Post-Islam, before Islam, he was very, very powerful. And they would rob, steal, etc. A very powerful, very mighty clan. So if anybody's got wealth, he can't see it. He'll take that wealth away. Now, after Islam, that dislike that anybody has got wealth is still there in him. That aversion for wealth, that anybody must have wealth, is still in him. But now it's taken, it's been reshaped. There's a reshape in the whole thing. The reshape is by why you got wealth. Give it out in sadaqah now. Give it in zakat. You're not supposed to keep wealth. Why you got excessive? Why are you hoarding up wealth? And he kept that person. Person wanted to live with him. So he told him, see, when I instruct you with anything, you must do it like I say. So anyway, at night some guest came. So he's going to slaughter one camel and bring it, feed these people. So So he had camels, one is of the highest category, then he's a second class camel. So instead of taking the first class, he took the second class, he slaughtered that and fed the mehman. He said, "Bhai, but I told you that whenever I give you an instruction, this is how you must carry it out. Why didn't you take the first class? Why did you bring the second class?" He said, "No, I brought the second class because both are, in their taste, they are more or less equal. This is more suited for riding. This is more suited for riding. The eating both are about the same." And he says, "No, see, I told you the best. The best you should have brought the best. And you saying that this is more suited for your need. You know what is the day of my need? The day of my need is when I die. So why did you break my command? See, now you can't see wealth. If you got wealth, now it must be out. That wealth must be gone out." So that aversion for wealth was so much in him that Usman al-Ghani would tell him in his zamana of Khilafat, "The people of Madinah Munawwar can't manage your level. Your level is too much." Right? Because we'll have different classes of people. Someone wants a little bit of wealth, someone doesn't want wealth, someone can do without, someone can't do without. Right? People's mentalities are different. Right? So generally people want some type of security. Most people want some type of security. And many people can do without it. Like you see in our system here, right? You see, a class of people need a lot of security. Then you see our black workers, right? They're doing some toho job. 100 rand a day is too much for them. Enough. They're going back to the wherever they're living, they're going. And they're quite comfortable. They don't have any lengthy wealth. They don't have a lot of wealth. But they're still comfortable. Mentally, emotionally, they are quite relaxed. They're quite comfortable. So that's a class of people that feel relaxed in that way. And there is a class of people that don't feel relaxed until they don't have a bank balance, they don't have so much of security, so much of wealth deposited, they don't feel that type of relaxation in their mind. So Usman al-Ghani knew now, he has to work with all classes. And Abu Dharr is one, why do you have that wealth? That wealth must be out. But that malaka doesn't, you don't wipe it out altogether. It is not wiped out completely. Is just given a redirection. You direct it, but redirect, that's all. It was going on one direction, now it's gone on another direction completely. Then you look at Umar radiallahu anhu, right? Very firm. Before Islam also, very firm. And he is leaving his home, attempting something very serious, right? To go and murder, right? That's the attempt. So he's very serious, very firm in his way. Right? Someone may say aggressive, right? After accepting Islam, there's, I think, if someone read the hadith, you'll find over 15, 20 times, where he says, "Da'ani adribu unuka hadal munafiq." Just allow me to go and kill this person here. Let me go and kill him. So that nature has not been obliterated, but it's given a redirection. Before it was against Islam, and now it's against disbelief, but that malaka is still there, that feeling is still there, that intrinsic nature is not changed, but it's given a redirection. Once it was in this direction, and now it's in a different direction completely altogether. So the direction has been altered. Otherwise, that nature in itself is there, but it's just been redirected. So again, coming again, now someone has got that obsession with wealth, so they'll give a redirection to this. Now before, when you had that obsession of wealth, right, then it was for fancy cars, right, it was for big buildings, right, it was for a little bit of show and ostentation, so that wealth is still in your heart, but now use it for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, not just putting up a car, building, make a big expensive wedding, etc. No, not for that. Now that wealth, that love for that wealth is still there, but it's a redirection. Now you're going to spend it in some other avenue, in an avenue of reward. Spend it for example, for the path of Allah Ta'ala, or spend it on the poor, spend it on the orphan, spend it on the destitute, on the relative, in constructing a masjid or a madrasa or something, He was extravagant, he still wants to throw out. But he's throwing out now differently. Before he was throwing out differently. First he was throwing out differently, and now he's throwing out still, but he's throwing out differently. So this is what they say, that by us is the Islah of the Malakat. Now how do they get the Islah of the Malakat? How do they get the Islah of the Malakat? So they don't work just on the action. Because like I say, if I just correct the action, not read namaz, make namaz, right? Then you haven't corrected the mindset. And if you corrected the mindset, now everything will be corrected. Now he's not going to gamble, he's not going to go and waste money, he's not going to be extravagant, he's not going to be showing off. Automatically, all those haram things will just leave it out. Right? Before the mind was going in a different direction, I was going in a different direction. It's still moving, but in a different direction. See? Now the question is, how do they then get this Islah done? How do they get this correction done? This Islah, Malakat, how do they get it done? So what I'm getting at is, you mustn't underestimate this Buzurgan Adeen of the past. See? Mawlana Musa Samrodi is one of the eldest people in the Nizamuddin Markaz. So he tells me, this Tablighi Jamaat is a mobile tasawuf. It's mobile tasawuf. It's tasawuf, but mobile. It's not stationary. The olden times, it was stationed one place. And I suppose it's engineered in this way, because people's lives are also mobile now. Before you heard of people, someone staying one place, 100, 200 years, 300 years, 400 years. Like you look at the people in Makkah, Mukarramah, the Quraysh, right? They will tell you their roots and their ancestries. 20 generations, they tell you also. This person here is connected to us in the 20th generation. Because they're all living in the same place. Same place they are living, right? So you know, this person is connected this way, the second generation, third generation, fourth, fifth, up to the 20th they can make it out. Same in Medina Munawar also, when Abu Talha had to give out, that he could make out his ancestry till the sixth generation, with very, very comfortably could do it. I ask anybody here, can you find out your sixth generation? Anybody? Sixth, seventh generation, can you find out? Can't, everything is lost to class. Why? Because our lives are now mobile. Today we are, tomorrow America, then we're going to Australia, like nomads, you know, nomads moving from one place to the other. So people's lives have become changed today. They're not living in one place for a long duration of time. They're always on the move. So now you need a moving Jamaat for this type of moving people, with a moving crowd. Right? When you got a moving crowd, then you need a moving Jamaat. That moving Jamaat will go and serve them all the time. Serve this person here, go and serve that person. Otherwise, you don't have a moving Jamaat, then you can't do the type of Islah and correction that is desired. Right? You can't do it. It's difficult for everybody. Some groups, they do it, they will do it. But overall, you can't do it so efficiently. So what I'm getting at, we don't underestimate them. They also were doing tabligh, but in a different way. Like I'd explained, that this Khanqahs, there's the multitudes of people that were accepting Islam and correcting their lives. In some Khanqahs, they were slaughtering 1,000 sheep every day. Can you imagine the multitudes that were coming, the conversions that were taking place every day? So many conversions, and so many people coming to change and correct their lives. So that was going on, But then for this age, Allah Ta'ala had decided for something else. Right? Whatever reason, Allah Pak knows best. But He decided for this movement, that this movement will be more efficient in this age and this zamana. Why I say this is because sometimes when we criticize and we analyze, then we begin to run some people down. One person is, this person, there's no sawab in that. They're sitting one khanqa, what are they doing? So that is very dangerous. Where we look down, we condemn, and then we make a comparison and we run down one group or the other group, then really what happens then is the little that you're doing, then the barakah of that little that you're doing, you are getting deprived of. You are getting deprived of the little that you are doing as well. So don't analyze and criticize and deprive yourself of the good. They also did something, you also doing something. But you don't claim excellence for yourself. La tuzakku anfusakum. You're going against the text of the Quran. La tuzakku. Don't claim some type of superiority for yourself. Don't ever do that. He's also doing some work, I'm also doing some work. And both require each other. Like you see, every person that is going to Jamaat, but he needs to send his child to a maktab. But the maktab effort is a different effort, and the Jamaat effort is a different effort altogether, right? He needs to send his child to the maktab or for a hifz, or the elementary kitabs and all that, he needs to send his child to some madrasa. Doesn't he need to send? But then do you say, no, they're not doing any dini work. Do you say that? We don't say that. They're doing dini work, but they're doing from a different line. We're doing dini work from a different line. This is also required, that is also required. Say for example, in the absence of this maktab, right, or the primary madrasas, primary madrasas, if they went around, then I ask you, those people that are going Jamaat, then would they have been able to give the direction to their own children? Can they? They can't. Can they give? Who's going to take care of your child, teach them alif ba, teach them hifz, teach them primary masail, what is faraz in namaz, what is faraz in wuzu, in husal, etc. Who's going to teach them? Will you have a proper structure to teach them, to direct them in that? You won't find it. Will you find that? You won't find it. So you need a proper structure, someone to lead them in that direction. Right? So you will not say that these people are doing dini work. They are doing dini work, they are doing one line of dini work. We are doing another line of dini work. And both are important, both need to complement each other. That's what we will say, right? Now that's a sensible person. I mean, he will say that both need to complement each other, then he'll respect each other. Then what will happen is, now, his child has come out from the maktab, from the primary level, and he's understood now that my child has come out from the primary level, and I've been respecting the Jamaat work, so now I will connect my child to the Jamaat work. Right? Now the child is connected to the Jamaat work, now he's 17, 18, 19, so he's fine, he's found his feet, and he's going in a direction, he's going right, right? But say for example now, the people that are in the primary maktab, they said, no, this is another work, they're not doing dini work, right? They're not doing dini work. What will happen to that child that is about 17, 18? So my father said it's not a dini work. So will he ever encourage his child, or will his child be comfortable? They won't be. So he's cutting his own feet. Now the child won't go into the Jamaat work, etc. He'll get lost into the crowd. Right? Now the same will apply to a khanqa. Now you'll get those people that are quite comfortable in Jamaat, going 40 days, 4 months, 1 year at a time. They're comfortable in doing that, right? And they are the majority that don't have that type of willpower to do it. They don't have the determination, right? Now, if we say that this is not dini work, right? This is not dini work. They're not doing dini work, right? So the majority who's not in the Jamaat work, will they get affiliated to the khanqa work? So what deen have they got? They can't go to the maktab because it's a primary level, it's meant for children, right? And they're not interested in Jamaat, right? Now, is there anything left for them? So you caused them to be in the peril, in the destruction, you have brought their peril, right? So that's what happened. Because you showed an aversion towards it. You showed a dislike towards it. And what has happened now to the multitudes? So these type of statements are very dangerous. Very, very dangerous statements. That is why I'm saying, you know, that the hadith says, Allah, هَلْ أَدُلُّكُمْ عَلَىٰ مِلَاكِ ذَٰلِكَ كُلِّ. Nabi Sam showed them, alright, this is namaz and the virtue. This is zakat and its virtue. This is jihad and its virtue. But then at the end he says to the sahabi, it was Mu'adh radiallahu anhu or Abu Dharr radiallahu anhu. Ji? Mu'adh radiallahu anhu. But I show you something that will preserve all this. مِلَاكِ ذَٰلِكَ, understood translation, is that which will preserve all this. Look after your tongue. Now one error of the tongue, and it brought about the destruction of an entire multitude of people. All people are gone lost. One slip of the tongue. So, no, this is not dini work, man. This is not dini work. So you said that it wasn't dini work. What's left for that person? He is not in Jamaat. He can't get into the primary maktab. So has he got any deen now? He can't find. Any deen he can't find. So he's lost, completely lost. He's nowhere. Not here, not there. And when you have a complimenting approach, this is important. So the person that is comfortable here, he's going here and he's finding his deen. Person is comfortable there, he's getting his deen. Person is comfortable here, he's getting his deen. So you will have all these three type of groups. Now where we get off is, say, you know, the istima, there were 10,000 people, 100,000 people, alright. There were so many people, right? Very good, right? So we will applaud the numbers and all that, right? We'll applaud the numbers, alhamdulillah, very successful, etc., right? But now you ask yourself, the 100,000 that came at the istima, are they all active in deeni work? They just came for the dua, for the barakat, the 2-3 days, something is carrying on, they there, right? But are they active afterwards? The istima is not a reflection, it's not a reflection of how much of work is taking place. It's a reflection of, you know, 100,000 people came, so 100,000 people are doing the work. In that 100,000, maybe 2,000 people that are doing work, serious work is just 2,000 people. The others came for the barakah, to listen to the bayans, whatever, that's also very great. But now this is where we get confused, we complicate ourselves. So what I'm getting at is we need to take deen and understand and respect every facet. You see, today's kitab reading, I mentioned this sometimes before as well, that most people got blessed in this world or the hereafter because of two things. Either because of respect, adab, or because of some kindness. This today's bayan, today's kitab reading, the Fazail al-Sadaqat, was the same thing, some aspect of respect to deen. A man got thrown in this world, he got chucked in the hereafter. Both ways he got through. Both ways. Fazail al-Sadaqat this morning we read. Both just because of some respect. Either respect or an act of kindness. So you got the respect or an act of kindness, you're winning. You know, all round you're winning. And if you lost that respect, then for you to fall down is very easy. It's like, you know, you scaffolding, right? You're on a scaffolding. And that scaffolding has been eaten by termites. It's a bamboo scaffolding. In India, they use scaffolding, bamboo. And all been eaten up by termites. You don't know when you will come landing down, right? It's all eaten from within. So that's the element of respect. You remove the respect, you broke your own feet. You remove the respect, and you broke your own feet, you will come tumbling down just now. So these are the two elements that will preserve your deen. You will be blessed here, you will be blessed in the hereafter. Show the respect. Any work that is in conformity with the sunnah, right, and has been practiced by our akabir, our elders, right? Obviously, our akabir can't be bidatis, right? Hazrat Muhammad Thaniyur is going to Hazrat Muhammad Ilyas Sabram is going to Muhammad Thaniyur Rahmatullahi. So, Muhammad Thaniyur is the mujaddid of tasawuf, right? So, if this was all bidat, then why did Muhammad Ilyas Sabram go to him? He went to a bidati, nauzubillah. He didn't know, Muhammad Ilyas didn't know that he's going to this type of a person for his duas and blessings and all that. Or he went there to make dawat and tabligh, come out in jamaat. Did he go for that? Now it's simple thing, simple. We just have to use our brains, understand why these people did it. They did it because they respected and they knew that this is needed, that is needed. This is perhaps needed on a general level, this is needed on a special level, but both are needed. You can't say that this now is become redundant and you don't need it at all. You can't say that. See, that's a misconstruing, it's a limitation of our brains, we can't understand it well. When we're misconstruing it, we are depriving so many people from the avenues of deen. So what I was getting at today is, in this whole Khanqah effort, in the original way was Islah of Malakat. I showed you what was Malakat, right? But now how would they then make Islah of the Malakat? This malakat, how do they correct them? They correct them in different ways. One way that they would correct this malakat is, right, for example, in the major illnesses is obsession for wealth opposition. These are major problems. Woman is a secondary thing. Main thing is wealth and position, right? Why I say woman is a secondary thing? Because you can only get to woman if you got wealth. If you don't have that wealth, can you get up there? You can't get up. So you feel that the wealth is the key to all this haram. So therefore you need that wealth. So wealth and position, these are the two things, right? There are two main stumbling blocks on the way. Wealth and position. Hubbe mal and hubbe jah, right? So now, how do they go about correcting it? So I'm just showing one method. There's different, numerous methods, different approaches how they will correct this. But one simple approach that has been used, that was very effective, right, in the old days, is they will engage your thought, engage your mind in a thought, right, drown you in a thought. Right. In what thought they will drown your mind? They will drown your mind in the thought of death, in the thought of the hereafter, right? Or in the thought of Qiyamah, in the thought of Qabr, right? So now when your mind is being drowned in that, then you think, hey, today I'm here on the surface, tomorrow I may be in the belly of the earth, right? Today I'm on the surface, tomorrow I may be on the belly. So it's so unpredictable. When it's so unpredictable, then I can't hold on to this so firmly as though this is unshakable, unmovable, immovable, this earth and all its security. You can't say it's immovable, indispensable, it will remain with me. It can't give you that level of security. I have to move down. When I have to move down, then what arrangements have I made for my security? You, a normal person, right, he makes provisions, right, arrangements for his old age. Doesn't he make it? And for his young children, doesn't he do that? That's not our natural thing. Our natural thing that we make some arrangements, some security for our old age and for our children that are growing up, right? But then you ask, when you begin to meditate about akhirat, qabr, death, etc., then the thought will strike you, but what security, what arrangements have you made for that life? You have made all the arrangements here, right? Well, good, we don't dispute the need to make the arrangements. But that life is undisputable. When it's not disputable, then what arrangements have you made for that? Have you made any arrangements? And if you made arrangements, is it proper arrangement? Is it secure arrangements? Or is it just you are just speculating and taking a chance? Have you made proper arrangements? Now when your mind gets drowned in that, then the world and the nature of the world, then it becomes like the hadith says, the wing of a mosquito. Now it's not, you don't show that type of significance. It's no longer an important thing. Where the hadith says, "Iza azumat ummati ad-dunya," like how it is today. That today the dunya is a very, very serious thing, very, very important thing. Very important thing. It's about the most important thing. You go to anywhere. You know, I'm going to speak to Mawlana Qazi. No, I'm in a meeting. What meeting? Business meeting. Day meeting, night meeting. Anywhere, everywhere is meeting and business, right? So it's become a very serious thing. The most serious thing now, it's dunya. So the hadith says, and then zalat anum haybatul akhirah. That haybat, that fear of the akhirah that you're supposed to have, that's gone. It's gone, you don't have that. So akhirah is just a dream. It's not a reality. Why? Because you consider this to be a very, very serious thing. So that seriousness that you're supposed to have for the hereafter, that has become like a joke, in Nauzubillah, an insignificant thing. You don't attach that type of significance and importance to the things that are after death. And the proof to it is, you want to see the proof in life. The proof in life is, go, just attend one janazah to the Qabristan. See the folks that are proceeding to the Qabristan, and at the Qabristan how they're behaving. Just look as they're proceeding to the Qabristan, and at the Qabristan, how they're behaving. Someone is on this phone, is smiling away, someone has got his ringtone, someone is talking about business, someone is, all unrelated things. It's absolutely unrelated things they're talking about. That was a moment now of reflection, deep reflection. Hey, this man, this chacha went today, I don't know whose number is coming just now. You're supposed to be absorbed, you're supposed to be drowned in that thought. So when you're going to get drowned in that thought, then obviously, then you're going to give up that significance of this life. When you're going to give up the significance of this life, then everything will fall in place. I need to have all my ducks in the row. You know, I got some interest things here. I need to get that sorted out. Otherwise, Kabar will catch it just now. Or, you know, this person here, I haven't paid him on time. I'll catch it just now. I don't want to take a chance. I can just die tonight. And then I haven't paid this person here. What's going to happen? Or that person there, you know, I deceived him. Whatever I was selling him, I cheated him. You know, I don't want to get into problems. I don't want to get into azab. I want to get this all straightened up straight away. So you'll become so serious. You'll become so conscious about it. Well, I got so much of wealth. But you know, all right, the Quran is speaking about relatives, brothers, neighbors, then neighbors that are Muslims, that are non-Muslims, then travel companions. All these people here now, did I take care of all of them? In my neighborhood, someone is starving. Do I know about them? I've got so much of wealth, but did I take care of these people? Someone is starving, someone is hungry, someone is in the labor, someone is like this. Now, at least I should have that fikr that has Umar radiallahu anhu. I mean, I've got so much of wealth and so much of power. Umar radiallahu anhu had that type of concern when? Before becoming a khalifa or after becoming a khalifa? After the khilafat, not before the khilafat. You didn't hear about Umar going around Medina Munawwara, because now he was sitting on wealth, sitting on power. When he's sitting on power and wealth, then he's going on finding out. Right? Okay. Uskiya kaisa hai, some musafir came to Medina Munawwara, that person is poor, that person is hungry, that person is deserving. So he's so wealthy. Now show me one wealthy person who's got that type of concern, as Umar Radhiya, show me one person. So if we are absorbed into that fikr of the akhirat, this person here, that person, his daughter is in labor, they don't have enough money. And I got all this money now. If Allah Pak has to question me, then what? What will happen? So you see how your fikr will go now. Your fikr will go in a different direction now. If I die now, and then that person, his daughter or his son, and this thing was happening here. Right? And what did I do? I was sitting on power, I was sitting on wealth. The least I can do is now, I got so much, at least I'll have one person to go and find out. I can't do it myself, I can't do the rounds. So I'll have one person to go and find out what's going on in this town here, who are the needy people, how much can I help, how much can I assist. So you will be so conscious. Now we are assisting people, right? But we are assisting people that I feel that assistance is a bribe. That assistance is a bribe. Because we assist people and then we count our favors to them. We remind them, give them reminders of our generosity. No, I did this for you. Sometimes direct and sometimes indirect. Yeah, you know. Yeah, but that person wasn't on. He needed a cup. We sorted him out. Don't worry. Allah Pak is great. We sorted him out. How you will give it under the belt, over the belt, but you'll give it to the person. Allah Pak is great, but we sorted him out. See how they talk. You don't consider it as an obligation. You know, hey, I'll get into trouble just in my cupboard. Because the Quran is saying, وَبِذِي الْقُرْبَى وَالْيَتَامَى وَالْجَارِ ذِي الْقُرْبَى وَالْجَارِ الْجُنُوبِ وَالصَّاحِبِ بِالْجَمْبِ. So many neighbors. This neighbor, that neighbor, that neighbor. And have I did anything for them? Or anything, any extra hand? That's for me. Me, myself, my children. Me, myself, my children. Have I done anything for them? Now, that's what these Sufiya had done. Had absorbed their minds. Or got their Murideen, Mutalliqeen to get their minds absorbed in all these things here. So when they got absorbed, now there was a balance. When there was a balance, now it's like the plane that has been balanced. It's got both the wings. Now it's ready for takeoff to the arsh of Allah Ta'ala. Right? Without that, how can it reach Allah Ta'ala? It's not balanced. You got one side, you got it right, but the other side is not right. So are you going to be reaching that way? You're not going to reach that way. So you see that. What I'm showing you today was the procedure of Islah, Reformation, Correction. Today is different, but the original, the former days, it was different. If I have time, some incidents I can relate afterwards, but how people went into Khankas and how the Islah was done in this way, you know, in this way, we say Islahe Malakat. So it was a different approach. Today is a different approach. We don't run down any of the approaches. But what I'm showing you is why did they opt for that against the present method? Allah Ta'ala tawfiq nasib.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Today we'll discuss some of the adab of and the practical method of salah. That before commencing salah, one should ensure that the clothing that he is wearing is clean and pak. There is no napaki and najasat on it. Together with that, the clothing should be loose and not tight-fitting. And likewise, it shouldn't be revealing your satr and your private area. Then the place where you are going to be performing salah, that should also be clean and pak. Then before commencing the salah, you would be in the state of wudu. And then you would make your niyat for whichever salah you are performing. Then when commencing the salah, you would raise your hands until the thumbs are parallel with your earlobes and your palms will be facing the qibla. That some make the mistake and the palms are facing the cheeks or the face. So the sunnat way is for the palms to face the qibla and it will be raised to where the thumbs are parallel with the earlobes and the palms entirely will be facing the qibla. That they won't be backwards nor would they be front and the fingers will be kept in their natural position and then your gaze will be towards the place of sajda. And then when saying the takbir, you won't pull your head down, nor will you pull it back, but rather the head will be kept straight, just with your gaze on the place of sajda, and then you will say the takbir, Allahu Akbar. And upon lowering the hands, you would place the right hand over the left hand, placing both the hands below the navel, and then with the small finger and the thumb of the right hand, you would form a ring around the wrist of the left hand, and then the remaining three fingers, you will place it over the forearm. So you will form a ring with the small finger and the thumb around the wrist of the left hand, and the three fingers will be kept over the forearm, and they will be placed below the navel. Then you would commence the salah by reciting the thana, subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika, and this would be recited by everyone, whether a person is the muqtadi, that is reading behind the imam, whether a person is the munfarid, reading alone, or even the imam, everybody will recite the thana. Thereafter, the a'uzu and bismillah will be recited. So, a'uzu and bismillah will only be recited by the imam and by the person who is a munfarid reading alone. Person who is a muqtadi, the one reading behind the imam, he will only recite the thana and thereafter he will remain silent for the remaining duration of the qiyam, the standing posture. After a'uzu and bismillah, then you would recite surah Fatiha. And upon the completion of surah Fatiha, you would say Ameen softly. And thereafter you will recite the surah before going into ruku. Then if it is the fard namaz, then the sunnat qirat for fajr and zuhr salah is to recite surahs from the group of surahs known as tiwal mufassal. So tiwal mufassal are those surahs from surah hujurat in the 26th para till surah idha sama'un shaqqat in amma para. Then for the asr and isha salah, the sunnat surahs are from surah buruj till surah qadr inna anzalna. And for the Maghrib namaz, the Sunnah surahs are from Surah Bayyina, Lam Yakuni Ladina, till the end, till Surah Wan Nas. Upon the completion of the Salah, upon the completion of the Qirat, you would then go into the posture of Ruku, and you would start saying the Takbir, Allahu Akbar, as soon as you start lowering your back, and you will end off the Takbir once you reach the posture of Ruku completely. That you won't start bending and thereafter only say the Takbir, or say the Takbir and then bend, but together with bending, you would say the takbir, and then you would go into the posture of ruku. So you would say, from the standing posture, you would say, Allahu Akbar. Then in ruku, the back has to be in line and straight with the head, with the neck. And it should be straight. And the arms also have to be straight. The one you shouldn't bend your elbows. And then the shin, that is the knee downwards, that should be kept straight, as well as the thighs. So to get that right, one should try to push himself a bit forward, not so much that the person will fall, but slightly forward. So then in that way you would be able to get it almost straight. So in ruku, the elbows will be kept straight. The shin, that will also be kept straight, trying to push yourself forward. And the back and the head would also be kept straight. And you would make ruku in this manner. And then in the state of ruku, you would keep your gaze towards your feet. and recite the tasbih, masnoon tasbih, subhana rabbi al-azim, thrice or any other odd number of times, and you would hold your knees in ruku, you would grasp it with your fingers, spread apart, and you would firmly hold it. You won't displace it, but you would firmly grasp your knees in a state of ruku. Upon the completion of the tasbihat, you would then say, Sami Allahu liman hamida, coming up from the ruku posture to the qoma posture. So the imam will recite Sami Allahu liman hamida, and he will suffice on that. The muqtadi, the one behind the imam, he will say, Rabbana wa lakal hamd. And if a person is a munfarid, reading alone, then he will say both Rabbana Sami Allahu liman hamida as well as Rabbana wa lakal hamd. And then you would remain in the qoma posture, the standing posture after ruku, with ta'dil arkan. That is, you won't rush immediately upon getting up from ruku into the posture of sajda, but you would stand until you are at complete ease, and then only you would move on to the posture of sajda. So we will stop here for today, and everybody should form their groups and try to demonstrate the postures of salah. Inshallah, we'll continue tomorrow.